Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, May the 9th, and an absolutely beautiful, I mean, it's like, it's the perfect day of spring. A little warmer, perhaps, than you would say spring or the month of May, but it's just sunshine. It's just perfect. So what a good day to talk about Texas politics. Well, there's a big election. There's a big runoff down here in Texas. It'll happen on the 22nd of May, and it's going to put this Texas election into a little bit of context, because what we have right now is Lupe Valdez and Andrew White. They're the two finalists on the Democrat side, and they're going to be having a debate on May 11th, which is in a couple of days. But it's kind of a strange debate, because as I was reading in the news today, neither one of these two people, or the debate, I should say, is going to be seen by the whole state. It's only going to be in Austin. It's only going to be by the public television station there in Austin. I guess you could pick it up online, and it may be streaming online. I don't know for sure, but I'm just a little surprised that the debate is not being carried out on a statewide basis. I don't know. It's a little strange for me to see that. Normally, of course, when we have these debates, we have them for a whole state to watch. After all, it is the governor of Texas. I can understand if it was the mayor of Austin or a congressional election in Austin, but this is for the whole state. So you would think that both of these candidates would insist in having a debate for the whole state. Well, apparently not so. Now, it could change, I suppose. Maybe they'll put pressure on these two candidates or on the people hosting the debate. Maybe they'll put some pressure. But I tell you, it is absolutely strange. I've never seen anything like this before, where you have a debate that is supposed to be statewide, but yet only one city gets to see it. Well, while we wait for our friend George Rodriguez to join us, just a couple of other general stories from the news. Maybe you've been following the confirmation hearings over at the U.S. Senate for Gina Haspel, who has been nominated by President Trump to be the new CIA director. This is really, really a very qualified lady. I mean, if you just look at her background, if you look at how she has grown within the CIA bureaucracy. I mean, this is a lady who does not really come from the, she's not really a political person, meaning that she was developed within the agency as a bureaucrat, and it would be the kind of lady, Frank, I could see, for example, President Obama nominating this lady, or I could see if Hillary Clinton had won the election, I could see Hillary Clinton trying to make history by nominating the first woman director. So this lady is totally, completely qualified. So what are we watching? What are we watching on television? We're watching a bunch of Senate Democrats asking a bunch of irrelevant questions about torture. Well, let's look at that story a little bit. I have a post about this coming out Thursday morning. First of all of this about these prisons, they're asking her about these so-called rendition prisons where we used to detain terrorists many years ago. This was actually started out by President Clinton in 1995, as the threat of terrorism began to grow. President Clinton decided, "Hey, we have to find a place to hold these people. We have to find them. We have to put them somewhere." So, as a consequence of that, many of these terrorists would be captured in the battlefield or whatever. Not necessarily the battlefield, because we were not fighting at the time, but they would be captured in the course of doing operations against terrorists, secret operations. We would capture these people, and then we would send them, let's say, to Egypt, or we would send them to Jordan, where they would be held and where they could be interrogated. And that's what these prisons were all about. It was approved, as I say, by President Clinton in 1995. Then, of course, after you have 9/11, everything changes, and obviously everything rises to a brand new level, the threat of 9/11, the threat of terrorism, the threat of terrorists potentially using nuclear weapons or chemical weapons against one of our cities. And this of course, expands. Completely legal, completely authorized by the president, and the Congress was aware of this. And then that's where Guantanamo was created. And more of these prisoners were being processed. Now they were prisoners because they were being captured in the battlefield against Al-Qaeda and all of that. So then it goes into that, and it grows significantly as the number of people who are captured obviously grows significantly. Then we begin to, interrogate some of them. Did we get a little rough with a couple of them? Probably. Did we maybe push them around a little bit more than we should have? Maybe, I don't know. But everything that was done was legal, meaning it was authorized by the President of the United States, and it was passed down to the people like Gina Haspel, who were, the administrators of the program at some point down the road of this program. Now they're coming up with all of these questions about, do you support torture? I mean, it is absolutely ridiculous. And it really goes back to a central question, and that is, what exactly have these hearings turned into? And especially in the Trump presidency, they've become nothing more than just attacks on the president, President Trump in this case. I remember, look, when President Obama's nominees, whether it was John Brennan, whether it was the Secretary of State, whatever, these people were put through questions, of course, but they were basically given the benefit of the doubt, meaning they were appointed by the president, and the fact that they were appointed by the president was respected, was respected by the members of the U.S. Senate. Well, not anymore. Now you have every senator has to give a little speech, particularly the Democrats. They all have to give a little speech about torture. I suppose they all want their little video clip so they can put it in an email that goes out to thousands of their supporters asking them for money. And it is really very sad, because I don't believe by any circumstances, I don't believe that this is what the confirmation hearing was created for. The confirmation hearings were not created to turn everything into a political battle. Basically, the confirmation hearing was, you bring a person qualified, I mean, qualifications, of course, being, you know, within certain parameters of qualifications, whether it was experience, whatever it may be. You would bring these people up to the hearing. They would ask them some general questions, and then they were approved. And most of the time, they were approved with significant percentages. Again, because the fact that they were nominated by the president was given a certain amount of respect so that the president could have his own team. Not anymore. Now every one of these hearings turns into a political circus, and I think it's very sad. I don't think we're doing the country any good, you know, beating up on this lady who the only thing she did was to be a good soldier in the CIA and carry out whatever orders she was given. That's it. That's what she did. And now she's being treated this way. I think that this is, frankly, despicable. And I think somebody on the Democrat side has to stand up and say, hey, folks, we can't, you know, this is not what these hearings are for. If you have a beef with President Trump, great. Let's do that in the political arena, but not in these hearings. I mean, come on. This lady is more than qualified to be the CIA director. I mean, this is one of the most qualified candidates who has ever been nominated to be CIA director, and she ought to be getting 90 votes. I mean, this lady ought to be getting 90 votes when it's all said and done. It doesn't mean that the senators don't get to ask questions, but to go back and relive something that happened 10, 15 years ago, and with, you know, the benefit of hindsight, we can always look back and say this or that. The bottom line is that she was trying to protect the United States. We were living at a different time. I have a post about this coming out on Thursday morning, and I begin by asking people, just go back to 9/11. Take yourself back to September 11th, 2001, let's say the afternoon or the evening of that day. Take yourself back to the next few days. Were you really worried about mistreating terrorists? No, I think you and me and everybody else was worried about the fact that there may be more of these attacks, that there may be more, that they could be hitting us in lots and lots of different places and maybe using even more dangerous and even more lethal weapons than airplanes. So that's what we were confronting back in those days. And to sit here now and try to use your 5 minutes at a Senate confirmation hearing to beat up on President Trump, and that's what this is all about, just beat up on President Trump, I just think that it's a despicable thing to do. I just don't know how else to say it. This is a very qualified lady. This lady should go in. She should go in. She has absolutely no problems with her background. she's going to make an excellent CIA director, and her resume is just stellar. This is an absolutely stellar lady, and that's all I'm going to say about it. So let's get this lady confirmed. She needs to be CIA director, and put all the politics aside, because they don't belong in these confirmation hearings. We're going to take a little break. We're going to hear from my friend Carlos, and we'll be right back.
This is Carlos Gerard Harpies. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Yes, and we have a link to Carlo's website right there on the show information. If you look under the show description, you'll see right there, see Carlo's schedule. Click on that, and it'll take you to the schedule, and you'll be able to check him around the Dallas area. He does a great job. He does a great job playing around town and providing the music that makes your dining extremely, extremely interesting. Well, what can I tell you? We may not be talking to George today. There may be a problem with his schedule, and we'll just have to rearrange our time today and maybe reschedule him for another time. So I regret that, because we have a lot to get into. But let's go ahead with a lot more topics. A lot of things are going on. The other big story, of course, is the Iran nuclear deal. Well, what can I tell you about the Iran nuclear deal? It was not a very good deal. And I'm not saying that. Democrats like Joe Lieberman are saying that. Democrats like Senator Cardin of Maryland are saying that. I mean, there were many, many Democrats who were very concerned with this deal. And they, you know, some of them voted against the deal. But the biggest problem with the Iran nuclear deal is the same problem with DACA, the same problem with the Paris Climate Accord, that President Obama decided to govern by executive pen. Like in DACA, instead of going to Congress and trying to work something out with Congress, I understand it's difficult. I understand it's not easy to work with Congress because, look, you know, they have ideas too. They have voters too they've got to take care of. So, you know, you've got a president over here. You have a Congress over here. They don't always see eye to eye. But throughout our history, we've been able to have presidents and Congresses work together. It takes a little bit of give and take on both sides. Well, he didn't do that with DACA. He just simply, you know, used his executive pen, and he gave us DACA, which, of course, is a disaster, as we know by now. And DACA is, you know, has basically ran out the time or expired or whatever. President Trump said, okay, I'm not going to renew this, but I'll send it to the Congress and let the Congress deal with it. Well, who knows what's going to happen with DACA? Probably nothing now. But again, it's another example of President Obama deciding that he's going to govern by executive pen. The other example is, of course, the Paris Climate Accord. He went to Paris, he negotiated, or he signed an agreement that then brought it back and said, hey, we're in this deal. Well, no, you don't do that. You don't put the United States in a climate change agreement. You don't do that. You don't do that because that's not your responsibility. That's not what you do as President of the United States. You can go and negotiate the deal. You can go and say, hey, I'm here representing the United States, and, you know, I like this, but I got to take it home, and I got to take it to the Senate because they have to ratify this thing. I have no legal authority to enter the United States into this agreement. Same thing with Iran nuclear deal. He could have brought back the deal and said, look, we've negotiated this. We think it's a good deal, and here are the reasons for it. No, he didn't do that again. He implemented the agreement, even though it did go to the Congress, but it never went in as a treaty. And in fact, it didn't even make it out of the Congress. It was literally defeated in both houses, which must have been a major embarrassment for President Obama. So here we are. Here we are. Now we have the Iran nuclear deal dead. DACA is dead, or at least dead as it was originally designed. And the Paris Climate Accord, that's dead also. Well, that's what happens when you govern by executive decree. That's what happens. You know, that we're not a country created that way. The United States was not designed to have a president govern by executive decree. And this is what happens when you have one. It becomes the mess that we have right now. I think President Trump was correct in pulling out of this deal. It was a lousy deal. And look, I'm willing to negotiate another one. I'm willing to sit down with the Iranians or whatever and say, let's renegotiate this thing. But before you go out there and commit the country, well, take it to the U.S. Senate. Let the U.S. Senate ratify this thing. Let the U.S. Senate come up with an Iran nuclear deal that satisfies the U.S. Senate, and then go back to France, go back to England, whatever, and say, this is the best I can get. This is the only thing I can get that makes the United States legally bound. This is all I can do. And let's see what happens. We're going to try to reschedule, George. We were hoping to get into the elections. We're going to do that the next time we chat with him. A lot of interesting things happening down here, as I mentioned, on the election. We have a runoff on the 22nd of May, and we have a debate coming up on the 11th of May. But as I mentioned a few minutes ago, I don't know whether you can see the debate other than Austin, Texas. It is the strangest thing that I've ever seen, where a debate for governor is only seen in one city. I'm sorry. I just think that's absolutely, absolutely, absolutely insane. Well, thank you very much for listening, folks. An absolutely beautiful day here in Dallas, Texas. And we will talk to you later. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.